Hey, what's happening? It is April 6th, a Thursday, another episode of Bitchin'. This one is brought to you by my fantastic sponsor, Earthquaker Devices. You need some stomp pedals, stomp boxes. You play rock and roll, country, jazz, soul. I don't care what kind of music you play. You got to get yourself some stomp boxes, and Earthquaker Devices is the best in the world. Located and built right in Akron, Ohio, the land of Devo. And what better band than Devo? I mean, they're the pedal kings. Michael Devin, you use pedals?
I do use pedals. Yes, yeah. I do. Yeah, man. I like effects. I'm into them. Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah, right? Which ones do you use? Man. You got to get some Earthquaker shit.
I'm not familiar with the Earthquaker shit, but I will check it out. I've seen you. I've seen posts that you have made, and I've heard you talk about them. But
so great.
I have a company, EBS, out of Sweden. I use their pedals quite extensively. And then things that they don't provide, you know, I've got some crazy stuff on the pedal board.
Yeah.
Whammy pedals and some MXR stuff, too.
That's I love the really, old school MXR.
Yeah, I got some
stuff. The thing I like about Earthquaker is, of course, they're made in America. They're comedy fans.
That's a plus, and that's a double plus.
Their pedals, the thing about pedals, and it started with this other company, I forget the name of them, but it became where they're pieces of art.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, man. The artwork and the design, all the lettering and the logo. Yeah. Totally.
It really came down to like that early shit, the Centaur Klon. And I talked about that with Joe Bonamassa.
That pedal's insane. I actually used that pedal in New Jersey when we were doing recording.
It goes for like $1,000 now.
Yeah. But it is quite a pedal, dude.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny because I had the original one, the brass-colored yellow one, you know?
Yeah.
And it had that fucking Centaur on it, you know?
Yeah.
And it was an incredible pedal. And then I sold it for what I, at the time, thought was good money, $500.
Yeah.
And now they're like $1,000, $2,000 or
Isn't
something.
Isn't that insane, a pedal?
Yeah.
Would
and
you
then
ever have thunk it?
I heard that the fucking guy is remaking them now, and they're just not as good. That's how.
That's always the story,
right?
It's like the old phase. It's like the phase 90s, man. I'm sorry. I don't care how many switches you put on there.
Yeah.
It's not the same as the old scripties. It's just not. There's something about those old 70s scripts, man. They're just.
I didn't like the look of that script, though. I loved like when MXR went to the block
letters. Yeah.
Because that script stuff was just. I was like, what am I playing, jazz?
Yeah, it was a little dainty.
Yeah.
A little British.
Yeah.
No offense.
Yeah, there is. It's funny, man. It's like pedals are just so, people don't even know, so part of rock and roll, man.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, without pedals, there's no Hendrix, you know, Crybaby, you know, all that stuff. And the fuzz, that stuff that Roger, what's his name? Roger Mayer. That's his name right here.
Mayer.
Yeah. He, look at the history of Roger Mayer. Love to have this guy. Is he still alive? Let's see here.
Oh, that would be the interview right there.
Right?
Yeah.
Look at this early photo of Hendrix and
Whoa. Look, he looks like... Oh, I thought that was the guy to the...
Look at him here.
Wow. He's like the straight... He looks like their security.
He actually looks like CIA.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, he looks like he's just taking care of them.
Yeah, this guy...
I thought that was Wavy Gravy in the photo. It's not. It's Mitch Mitchell.
I've never seen this photo of fucking... Hey, look at this. If you guys want to visit his website, he is alive. roger-mayer.co.uk. But he made the pedals, man. Jimmy Page... Jeff Beck, all that stuff. This guy was the dude back in the day, just floating around here. And I'm, you know, I'm sure that's a fucking cool story that guy has.
Oh, imagine
sniffing solder.
Oh, imagine.
How do you even think about that? Like, hey, I'm gonna build this box, and then it's gonna make your guitar sound way cool. Like, boo doo doo doo.
Yeah.
Like, it basically made the guitar sound like it's exploding.
Absolutely, but yet it had a compression to it as well. So it didn't blow your head off.
Yeah.
It actually squeezed your sound while giving you a greater output.
And then that Crybaby, you know, I think that was invented for sax players or whatever, trumpet players or whatever, you know, I don't know. I could be talking out my ass, but, you know, I don't remember. I do remember this stuff back in the day, but look, he made the Octavia.
Yep.
The fuzz face.
Fuzz face.
Yeah.
A staple.
And then, oh man, don't forget about my favorite, the Univibe.
Oh man.
That's the one that makes your guitar sound like a Leslie.
Yes.
Which Stevie Ray Vaughan would fucking play the shit out of.
It's like in a lot of guitar players, you either go for the Univibe or you go for the wah. You know what I mean?
Right.
That was sort of the chocolate or vanilla flavoring. Yep.
And then my favorite.
Gilmore loved it.
My favorite later on became Garcia using the T-Wah.
Oh, yeah. That's so signature Garcia, the
right?
T-Wah.
I love
yeah,
that
he
sound.
Popularized that without a doubt, man.
Yeah, dude.
Because, and then the New Bohemians sort of had it in their singles for a minute, their Edie Brickell's band.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. What's that song? Oh, I fucking know that
one. I Know What I Know, If You Know What I Mean.
Yeah. I Know What I Want, If You Know What I Mean.
Yeah, that song had that, the T-Wah solo.
Yeah. Well, they're from the hippie kind of thing, you know. But it's, boy. Anyway, how are you today? Today we fucking just lost Don Rickles, man.
Oh, huge loss, man.
God.
One of the funniest men to ever visit planet Earth.
Oh,
Mr.
God.
Don Rickles. I mean, you talk about a quick wit. I was just talking about this morning because it was sad to see that he has gone. He was one of the last of the old guard, man, the old crew.
Yeah.
The old Rat Packers, man.
Yeah, man. And you know, 90, though, so... Not, I mean, like to me, I always say, bummer he's gone, but God, he lived a great
full life, man. And he was cognizant the whole way.
Yeah.
You know, he was doing interviews.
He was performing a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, you think about that. That's a good, fulfilled life.
Yeah.
The only guy left, man, is Jerry Lewis, man. He's sort of the only cat still.
Yeah, and I think
around.
his birthday was like 2 weeks ago, 91 or whatever.
Man.
Right?
Yeah. But he's still cognizant and doing it, you know.
Wow.
Doing interviews anyway.
Yeah, man. With Kelly's Heroes, that's a movie he did with Clint Eastwood, Telly Savalas, Carol O'Connor, and Donald Sutherland.
Wow.
Kelly, remember that? I remember that was an old school fucking.
You imagine being on the set of that hang?
Oh, right.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, man.
You'd just be splitting a gut the whole time.
That's the thing, man. You know, the thing about this guy is him and you had Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, all those guys, they knew each other's secrets. And they would just fucking roast like radical, you know?
Oh, yeah. It was very few people. Who could talk to Frank the way Don spoke to Frank, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He'd make appearances on all kinds of TV shows.
Yeah, I'm looking at
it. He'd do the late night circuits, all
that
stuff.
Dick Van Dyke Show, the Munsters, the Addams Family.
Remember that when he was on the Munsters? I remember that.
Yeah, and then Gilligan's Island.
Yep.
Oh, man, Get Smart.
Yep.
Andy Griffin Show and I Dream a Genie.
He was on them all, man. He made the rounds, Rickles.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's see here. I can't even believe that I can't. But my favorite was when he would be on Carson.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
He'd just come on there and just rip these guys.
He would. And he was like, he reminded me of a young, when Jim Carrey was really young. Or Robin Williams. Like when they would go on to a late night show like that, they would just take it over like a tornado.
Yeah, right?
They were just grabbing at anything and using it as fodder for comedy, you know? He was like that, man. He was just so quick, too.
I really couldn't believe how outlaw he was back in the day, you know? I mean, I just watched this, like a little clip of him roasting Ronald Reagan in 85.
Wow.
And Webster brings him out.
Old school, man.
Old school. Yeah. And the funny thing is like he roasted everyone and, you know, but it was all in fun.
That's the thing. And I think that's what has been missing for some time in the world of comedy, or at least in, you know, society at large is this paranoia about offending people. But I think the whole premise of comedy, in a sense, was to do just that, to expose everybody in their faults, shortcomings, whether you believe them or not. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, that's what Carol O'Connor said with All in the Family. He, you know, people are like, oh, man, well, the character's racist. Yeah. And he's like, I'm doing this show to show you how absurd people are in the middle of America.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I mean, how absurd is it that I had to use a different bathroom than you because you're black. Just, or you can't drink at the same water fountain as me because, or sit at the same diner. That is absurd, but that was in place for a long time. And even that was a huge leap forward from how people in this country were being treated. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
man.
It's like the comedy sort of served that need of like, let's expose this for how silly it really is, because that was the time when civil rights was booming and people wanted their rights as they should have had them. Now it's like this, let's not talk about it, it's too taboo. Didn't we already deal with that? Didn't we already fix that?
Yeah.
You know,
it's bizarre to me that people are racist and homophobic or anything. It just really blows me away.
Yeah.
And, you know, not once would I ever watch anybody roasting anybody or, you know, especially back then, and be like, oh, well, he means that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like, you're a fucking adult, man. Yeah. You're an adult. You know these guys know each other, and they're pushing each other's buttons for fun.
Yeah,
and that people are like, you know, I can't even believe he would say that. You know, that's not socially right, or you know, whatever.
So yeah, because it's like if you took some of that stuff that Rickles speaking of Carson, you know, he was on there once with Sinatra. Frank was on. And you know, Johnny and Frank, he's having a very serious talk.
Oh yeah,
because you don't. Only, like I said, only a few people could cross the line. Yeah. And then Rickles comes out, and you see Frank sort of revert to this more innocent-like kind of kid who just sat there while this tornado is going at him from every angle, and he's saying to Frank, oh, hey, by the way, Frank, you know, it's supposed to be between just them, but obviously the whole crowd can hear. He's like, oh, by the way, Frank, you know, I spoke to, you know, Vinnie Bumbats, and he says he took care of that thing for you. I also talked to, you know, Gino Gumbazzo, you know, and it's like, you couldn't do that these days. People are going, my God, I'm offended by this. I'm an Italian-American.
Yeah.
Stereotypes do exist for a reason. I'm half Irish, half Italian. Yeah, drunk jokes about Irishmen, I find them funny. Greasy jokes about Italians, I find them funny because for the most part, they're fucking true.
Yeah, well.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's the beauty of our differences. That's what we should be kind of embracing without thinking in terms of race. It's just different people in different cultures, man.
Yeah. It's a strange world we're coming into. And like I said, you know, if you're using your stuff in an evil way, that's different, you know.
Totally.
But when it's friends and people are obviously poking fun at each other and exploring that stuff for fun, and then somebody that doesn't even know them gets on their bandwagon and be like, you know, what you said there was totally inappropriate. And it's just like, ah, man, you know.
Yeah, because, I mean, the whole intention was to spread laughter, to create a joke.
Yeah.
What's better than that, man, getting people laughing?
My point is, there will never be another Don Rickles.
No.
Never.
No, there will never be another Don Rickles.
And it's amazing. I wonder what he thought about in the last 10 years of how the climate has changed as far as the comedy stage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of stuff, you know, like I wonder if he's like, oh, ah, fuck all that. Or like, hey, man, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But we're going to miss him, and what a bummer. The guy was a straight-up genius. He was the king of roasting.
Yes, he was, man.
When he came up, you knew everyone was going to just crumble.
Absolutely.
Crumble.
Absolutely, man. His facial expressions were so on point.
Yeah, he just looked like a bulldog.
Yeah, he did.
Just come up there like, ah, look at you, Reagan.
Barking bulldog.
Yeah.
Great documentary that follows him around, almost like an autobiography type of documentary that follows Don around through his show, you know, because he was still doing shows out in Vegas and also through his past. It's a really good documentary. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
He would play the Saban like once a year.
Would he really?
Yeah, man. He was just there like a year ago, you know?
Imagine how he has seen Las Vegas change.
Oh my God,
stories he could tell.
Those guys, right? Back in the day, what was going on there?
Man, the debauchery.
Right?
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
No cell phones, nobody taking pictures, nobody documenting your wily ways.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just radicals out there in the desert.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
With lots of money and time.
So good, man. You can go watch these classic Dean Martin roasts too on YouTube. And yeah. I recommend you go see them. What else happened, man? I was talking to you a little bit. I saw the Verve Richard Ashcroft on Monday. Are you a fan of him?
I am a fan of him. And I'm a fan of the Verve, at least that first album that they
Northern
dropped.
Soul.
Yeah, and I mean it's been a quiet time.
Well, since,
I think they put out a record in 07, 08, somewhere in there.
Yeah, it's like every few 2007. Yeah,
they reunited, but they only reunited for a second.
Yeah, and the guitar player and him just hate each other, I guess, you know. But I'll tell you what, you know, during that whole era of like Oasis, Blur, The Verve, Jarvis Cocker, all that stuff, and as much as I love Oasis, it was really always to me about The Verve.
Yeah.
And it really had to do a lot with that fucking, you know, how badass Richard Ashcroft is as a frontman and a writer.
Yeah.
You know, of course, Urban Hymns is just straight up a masterpiece, you know?
And it's a shame. It's a masterpiece, and it's a shame what happened there, but...
Yeah, when they get burned on the bittersweet.
Yeah, and they actually... The real tragedy of it is that they worked really hard to make sure they could secure... Because they used literally four bars of Last Time by the Stones.
And then turned it backwards.
That's right. And so, but they got the licensing for it. They made sure their asses were covered on the four bars. But they were really sued because the argument was that the melody to the song was too close to Last Time by the Stones, which, I mean, I never
heard the tune and thought the Stones.
Neither have I.
And I'll tell you what, if you want to sue people, I hear songs all day long.
Oh, yeah.
I mean... I still to this day do not know how that band Jet did not get busted for that.
Are you going to be my girl? Because it's Iggy
Pop.
Yeah, that's
Lust for Life, man.
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
Totally Lust for Life. I don't know how that happened.
It's exact.
Yeah, I don't know.
I was like, oh, well, these guys are going to go down for this, you know? And we're talking about like Urban Hymns. Like we're talking about Bittersweet Symphony. If you don't know, the song comes out and it becomes a massive hit. And
massive video as well.
Massive
remember the video.
And I believe Coca-Cola used it for a commercial. And this is really, I think, where it comes in, where they're like, wait, we can get some money here or something. And I think it's that old manager is that of the Stones that owned all those back, record, you know, from 68 back. I think he's the one that chased after it. Because they said we used this track and we turned it around, you know?
Oh, yeah. And they made sure that they were legally covered for it. But I think that's true. I think you make a good point. And the reason why Lust for Life, they didn't get attacked for that is because it was a bigger hit than Lust for Life. Now, if Lust for Life had made millions of dollars or was part of a catalog worth... You know, multi-millions of dollars like the Stones, you'd have some hungry wolves
whenever
going on.
Whenever there's some money to be sniffed out,
exactly.
These trolls come out.
Exactly. And it's sort of like if the song that lifted, you know, is the one that's kind of pillaging is bigger than, then nobody seems to care. It's kind of like, I always had a hard time with like Weezer's Sweater Song.
Yeah.
Because I always thought it was Big Long Now by Nirvana, which ripped off... a tune from I forget, it was like a third generation tune.
Yeah, Nirvana got busted.
The Pixies. Yeah.
Nirvana
right?
got busted on one of their tunes.
They did?
Yeah, on it was hold on, let me look this up.
Was it Come As You Are?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
They eventually got busted for that.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised. I mean,
hold on, let me look that up there cuz I remember there was some let me look this up here. There was some heat on it, you know?
Yeah.
Here it is. Nirvana Payback Killing Joke.
Ah.
Killing Joke 80s to create
That's what it is.
Borrowed heavily from Killing Joke's 80s to create Come As You Are.
That's it. You're right. That's it. I remember this. I remember when this kind of hit the social media and they were A-being this. I remember. Yeah, Killing Joke.
Yeah, Killing Joke. Which fucking underrated band.
Very underrated band.
I was just thinking that because before you came over, I posted up my record of the day and it was Garage Day Revisited.
Yeah.
And they do a Killing Joke song on there. And it's funny because I was basically kind of the same age as Metallica and I grew up in the same kind of area. And when I think about how fucking and deep and the depth of these guys, their music knowledge, like they're listening to like Budgie, Killing Joke. They're listening to like, you know, I'm listening to Saxon and, you know, and all that stuff, you know, the British new wave of heavy metal. But these guys are going like way beyond.
Yeah, they were digging, man.
Yeah, they're doing, what's the other band they always covered also? Like, first of all, that Garage Days record is Crusher.
It's the first time you can actually hear Jason.
Yeah, it's the only time you hear him until the Black Album.
Until the Black Album. Yeah.
It's hilarious.
I would love to hear a proper remix of Anjustice.
I don't mind how it sounds.
Yeah.
To me, it's, well, you're a bass player.
It's lacking a little bit. I mean, yeah, it's lacking a little bit. Even, you know, even within the context of a metal mix, you know, bass is not a cream record. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But still, and Master of Puppets, the bass sat in there, you know, in a nice spot. You know?
Yeah,
but
it's funny because, you know, like I always talk about when people, when they talk about a Metallica record, all they ever talk about is the sound of each record. Yeah. It's like, wait, are the fucking songs good or what?
It's only the snare is horrible on this one. There's a lot of... It's just they cast a wide net of production values on all their records.
Yeah, okay. It's so Diamond Head. Diamond Head. And of course, Anti Nowhere League. I mean, Bread Fan, Budgie, you know, like I wasn't listening to this kind of stuff. They do two Diamond Head songs, of course. But it's like, man, that is some fucking music knowledge, you
know? Absolutely, man. And, you know, as it is as a writer, you know, as a songwriter, you're always fishing. You're constantly got, you know, your line in the water and listening to things that you haven't heard before or things that are obscure, form your own music out of it. It's sort of the fun of it, I suppose. You know what I mean?
Well, I think like even when I'm doing comedy, it's like if you... Everybody watched the same three guys for influence. We would all just be angry comics up there. You know, you gotta have your, you know, your Andy Kaufman style dudes. You gotta have your Kinison kind of guys, your Pryor guys. Then you got your Carlin kind of political style guys. And then you've got some, you know, super dry humor kind of dude. You know, it's all different.
Yeah.
But I saw Ashcroft on Monday, and I remember...
Was he playing live at a venue?
Yeah, at the Wiltern.
So
he hadn't been here in like 7 years. And I was going down Wilshire Boulevard a couple weeks ago, and it was up on the marquee. And I was like, oh my God, I pulled over right away and put it into my phone, so I did not miss that. And, you know, because I'm a huge fan of this guy. And a lot of people don't talk about his solo work, which is really... fucking good. This record Alone With Everybody, it came out, what year did this record come out? It is smoking, man. 2000.
Yeah.
And I remember when it came out, I was like, how fucking great. Look, first of all, he's one of the coolest looking dudes.
Yeah, he is.
You know, he just fucking looks
from another time and place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like an early 60s.
Yeah, he could have been
from that cloth.
Hanging with Brian Jones.
Absolutely.
You know, that whole
Stones,
look.
Beatles, Animals, that whole scene, he could have been kicking around.
Absolutely.
Out there for sure. And even his, even outside of his aesthetic, his songwriting.
Oh, yeah.
Is clearly from that time and place as well. I mean, he's...
If you guys don't know this record, Alone With Everybody, man, I'm telling you, it is smoking. There's a song on there, A Song For The Lovers, and then there's I Get My Beat. And then this track that I absolutely love, New York. And it's just fucking killer. Oh, man. Let's see here. It's nothing like The Verve because he kind of gets into like, you know, it's it's like beats, you know what I mean? That's the way it kicks in. The guy's a fucking star, you know?
Great. Yeah.
Great fucking records. Now, his new solo record came out a few weeks ago. Nobody knows about it.
Nobody knows about it. I didn't know.
Yeah, which blows my mind. He's changed his look. Check him out here. He shaved his head.
Well, speaking of Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, right?
It looks like when Andy does Elvis.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
But this record actually came out in 16, but I just found out about it about a month ago or whatever.
What's it called? What's the title?
It's called These People. These People. And I'll tell you what, this fucking record smokes too.
Does it?
I wasn't even giving it a shot. I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know why. Now, I always ask people, like, you know, like Kings of Leon, why did people stop listening to them? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were putting out records, and all of a sudden it was like, wait, you don't buy their records anymore? Like, why? You know? And that, I was guilty again of that, of somebody that I absolutely love. And then I go see the show. He's playing these songs off the record, and I go, these fucking songs smoke. And I go home, I start listening to the record right when I get home. I go, man, this record's good.
Is it good? Does it sound good too?
The production? This record is great. Okay. And I tell you what,
I'll pick it up.
I posted a little bit of footage of Ashcroft from Monday night, and his voice is fire still. And he came on like, I am not fucking around. I'm a rock star, and I'm over here. I still love doing this. This guy came on. He was killing it for an hour and a half, never slowed down, just rocking, looking at people like, come on, motherfuckers, you know, like that kind of shit.
So he still had the front man. He still got his chops as a front man.
Oh, and he looks fantastic, and his voice was killer.
The band was good?
The band was smoking.
Yeah.
Man, the drummer.
That was the next question. How was the drummer?
I got to get the drummers.
It all starts from the bottom up, you know what I mean?
The drummer was great, and they had a guy on guitar, I guess, that's been with him for like 8 years from Oakland. Which I didn't know who I got my tickets from. My buddy gave me a ticket, who I call Santa Rosa Joey my whole life because never knew his last name. And it was like Santa Rosa Joey, and I still don't call him that. But I happened to call him out of nowhere about some, I was selling some Zep CDs.
Yeah.
I got a shitload of Zep CDs. I want to get rid of like
bootlegs.
Great ones, like Japanese ones. But I have no CD player. So I called him up. And he goes, hey, what are you doing tonight? I go, oh, I'm going to Richard Ashcroft. He goes, yeah, me too. I got a plus one, man. You want to go? I was like, oh, I'm going free.
Nice. Even better. Nice.
So,
serendipity.
Anyway, I wanted to tell everybody, if Richard Ashcroft's out on tour right now, go see this guy. He doesn't come around every year. And an absolute, from that era of Oasis and all that. Who used to donate.
They used to dedicate their songs to one another. Oasis.
Yeah.
Dedicated, I forget what songs
they loved each other.
They did. They loved each other. Yeah.
It's crazy, too, to think about. I started thinking about that whole musical era. You've got grunge, and right next to it, you've got Oasis, The Verve, Blur, and all that.
British
and
even, alt-rock.
And even Brian Jonestown Massacre. All that's going on. So what a plethora of music.
A fertile time for music, right? Man. I mean, very lucky to have experienced that in our lifetime. Because in a lot of ways, I think that's sort of the last of that as we venture off into more technological kind of, you know, stranglehold on art. It's more difficult for this sort of breeding ground to happen where everybody, it's still kind of a word of mouth thing, which it was back then. It was still word of mouth. Man, you got to check out this. You got to check out that.
Yeah.
We do it now because we're still, fans and rockers and, you know, music lovers. And,
absolutely, man.
But to the average person out there who's just sort of, you know,
relative. They've tapped out.
Yeah, yeah.
They've tapped out the average person. It's it's crazy because, or not the young people, but average people of, you know, what's going on right now. You know what I mean? Yeah,
people don't know what's going on right now.
They don't. They don't.
There is nothing. You know, they'll say nothing's going on right
now. Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah. That's that whole joke I always do. There's no good music anymore. It just makes my head pop off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I just I just threw that band to you, Slow Season.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah. These guys are from Visalia.
Yep.
And did you listen to it at all?
I did listen to it, yes.
Now, they got a new record out that's on, what is that, Bandcamp? Is that
Bandcamp.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look up this band, Slow Season. I sent it over to Eddie Trunk, too. They sound, to me, like early Soundgarden. Of course, there's some Sabbath in there.
There's Sabbath in
but
there,
But the punkiness of, the dirtiness of that early, like, flop and that, that Soundgarden shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, man. The Screaming Life.
Yeah, that fop. That era.
Yeah, holy punk. It was punk with was Sabbath. Punk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. And that's what this band sounds. The singer sounds great, and it's like, you know, stoner desert rock meets early Soundgarden. Yeah.
Right up my alley. Yeah. Right up my alley.
Four piece out of Visalia, the 99, the land of meth out there. Yeah. So they're probably the real deal. You know what I mean? And they look great. Yeah. And how great. Oh, I had a picture of their new cover. It was so good. Let me see if I could find it. You would love it. Did I send you the new record?
No, you sent me the...
Oh, yeah, that one, the Mountains one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great one. They've got a new record out. And they hit me up, which was badass, because I was giving it some shout-outs.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah, and they said, thank you so much, and... go see them. Apparently, they just play all over the place nonstop.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, man.
Yeah, that's it. Now that's
the only way to do it.
That's a new band I want to see. You know,
absolutely.
And then two days ago, I saw Mastodon at the at Amoeba, man. Wow. Now,
I saw that you went. I didn't know they were there though, man.
This fucking band, dude. No, I don't feel like enough people are talking about this band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
They're out of that Tool, Metallica and Justice for All, Queens of the Stone Age, Mars Volta kind of flavor world.
Absolutely. A little progressive and some progressive elements.
The new record, Emperor of Sand, unbelievable.
Really?
Holy shit.
I have not heard it.
Okay, they come on at Amoeba, which is amazing, and I'm like kind of front row, and they just fucking rip that store apart. The bass player, here's the thing I love about this band, four fucking singers. They're like old school Kiss or the Beatles.
Yeah.
All four guys singing.
That's awesome.
Like lead parts, not just harmonies. I'm talking about like one guy starts a verse and then the next guy comes in with like the pre-chorus.
Yeah.
And then a third guy will sing like a third verse and shit.
That's fantastic.
Oh.
The drummer of that band's really great.
Oh, man. And he was so nice. I talked to him after.
You did?
And I said, dude, I really want to get you on the podcast. And I was trying to get a hold of you through Cedric Bixler. And he goes, oh, no one hit me up. I'll do it. Here's my phone number.
Sweet.
Like, wow. So they're coming back. We got to go, you and I.
I'll take it.
You're going to be in New York.
When?
In 420.
No, 420.
I thought you leave Sunday.
Oh, no, 420. I will be in New York. I get back 425, somewhere in there.
You're coming back?
I am coming back. I got studio work and
who are you working with?
Gigs. I'm working with, there's this, I don't know if I should say yet. I'm not going to say yet. I'll tell you when I get closer.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to jinx it.
Is it something good?
Yeah, it's something cool.
Yeah.
For sure, yes.
I believe in that jinx thing now because fuck. Somebody will say, hey, man, we got something for you, this TV thing or whatever. I'll be, oh, great. And then I'll tell a couple buddies and it doesn't happen. So now I'm just like, fuck.
You know what? Yeah, sit on it until it's like, okay, listen.
I'll believe it when I'm on the set or in the studio with headphones on.
Or I got to be there tomorrow. So you know what? I'll tell you then kind of the thing. Yeah. We've all been down that road.
Anyway, they're playing Palladium and... there's two
on 420 of
420
all days.
With Eagles of Death Metal, which what a bill.
I may have to say, I gotta be home by 4:19.
Look at the cover of Mastodon's new
Emperor of Sand.
Oh, now this song Storm Breather is by far one of the best grooves I've heard in years. Check it.
Very cool.
Shit.
Yeah, great melody.
That is
great melody over the top of that.
And that groove, though.
Yeah, the groove's cool.
Man.
That these, nice open chord at the
these
end.
These guys are in their 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking living it, man.
Yeah.
The bass player, man, have you seen him?
I have not.
Okay, this guy's got like fucking that silver white hair and silver beard, kind of like, I think he dyes it like grayish silver, so he just looks like a cool kind of
wizard.
Yeah, like a wizard.
Yeah.
And he's got, he plays this Fender bass I've never seen. It must be, maybe it's his own model, but it's the kind of that, the Raiders Silver Burst, like the mm-hmm. the Les Paul,
mm-hmm.
but it's the shape of like a Mustang.
Wow.
But bigger, not all small, goofy.
Yeah.
And then he's got just the SVT, and his moves are insane, man. And he's just fucking smoking.
Really?
And then, oh my God, and then the guitar players just murder it, you know?
Yeah.
And then the drummer. I mean, it's just, I first saw him about 5-6 years ago with Ghost the place there? Universal Amphitheater.
Yeah.
And they just blew my head off, you know? I was like, this fucking band murdered. And now I've just been rolling every record, you know?
Great band name. It's so, it defines their sound.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I tell you, this band is fucking underrated, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they got multiple records out, and they just play the shit out of the instruments, and they believe it. They're not, no burnouts, any of it. They came right out into the crowd after at Amoeba, crazy, taking pictures, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Midday, drinking beers, gotta love it.
Doing it right.
Doing it right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rock
yeah.
and roll style.
Yeah, totally. I'm talking to them.
They smell like a musician.
Yeah, I go, these guys are real. Yeah, I can smell them. I was like, yeah, I can smell.
That's when you know you're living.
There's no stylist in the back going, here, throw on this wallet chain.
Yeah.
There's gonna be some press. These guys.
Let me spray you before you go out. No, none of that.
And big comedy fans, too.
Really?
These guys love stand-up. Yeah. So
well, you know, there's that blurry line between, you know, musicians and comedians, man. I mean, some of the funniest people I know are musicians, man.
I always say, like, Jacob Dylan could be the best comedian in the world if he ever did it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Never would have pinned him for a funny guy.
Guy is fucking, his wit. Like, talk about Don Rickles roasting people. This guy can roast instantly.
Really?
And you're like, wow, this guy's
fast. Got that from his dad because Bob is funny. You know, people took him for a very pensive guy. He's not.
Those old interviews when you see him?
He's funny and witty, man.
Well, he's clowning the press and they don't even know.
They don't know it, but he's totally clowning the
How
press.
How great is that, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, man. So anyway, Mastodon, I mean, a great music week, man. I go see Ashcroft and I see Mastodon and I'm like, I mean, it makes me feel so fucking alive. I was talking to Santa Rosa Joey and we were just like, how do you sit home and just not live?
Yeah.
I mean, even if you don't have money, go out of the house.
Yep.
Get the fuck out of the house.
Get out of the house, dude. Yep.
Man, just walk on the street and take it in.
Absolutely, man. And it's not that expensive to go see these acts.
No.
You're not talking about buying a fucking, I don't know, an Eagles ticket. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or Fleetwood Mac ticket.
Ashcroft was $25.
I mean, $25. That's 1977 ticket prices right there.
And not only that, but a movie is fucking $20.
Yes, it is.
You know?
Yes, it is.
Ashcroft was $25.
Perfect. I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll and take Mastodon, two. This show was free at Amoeba. You had to do was buy a CD and you got in free.
Awesome.
I know. Come on, man. Wow. So great.
God bless that band for being out there and still keeping it real, dude.
Oh, man, these guys.
If you guys in Mastodon are listening, man, keep it alive. Rock and roll.
I felt great, man. I felt great when I left there. I was like, yeah. Those guys are like, you know, like people, they always ask me, you miss music. If I was in Mastodon, yeah, I would miss it. That's what you need. Four dudes that are like your team. Like me and you and two other guys being a band.
Being a band.
It would just be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the hang. It would be the hang and the time put in. And that's what's so fragile about a band is that as strong as you are is also is how fragile you are, because you've got all these different personalities that are together when the music is not playing. You know, that's where it really matters, I think. Your brotherhood and your commitment to music and to the music you're making. That's what keeps you together, man.
Yep, it's true. And I also think when you get older, you realize what guys like when you're young starting a band. A lot of times, other than people that were like Ramones or people that are in the neighborhood or related or whatever, it's a full gamble.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Basically, what you're doing is it's a lot like online dating. You're going to the newspaper back then, bass player, got the chops, equipment, and long hair, ready to take on the world and rock faces. And so you go, well, he wants to rock faces. Let's give him a call. Yeah. There's no background checks.
No, dude.
There's none of that. It's just you like Anthrax? I like Anthrax. You're in. He looks pretty good. And then about a year in, you go, hey, this guy's fucking weird. You know what I mean? And I'm weird as fuck. I get it. You know what I mean? I'm all like militant. Like, we got to do it 7 days a week, all day, all night. Get your look together. I get it. I'm a fucking weirdo. I tell you that. But you're okay. So now, you've got four fucking mystery dudes in a van who start to learn who they are.
Yeah.
You're like, this guy likes to eat his own toenails, man.
Yeah, totally.
That shit is fucking weird.
Oh, this guy's got restless leg syndrome. Fuck.
Yeah, that's real. Restless leg. Yeah. And then this guy snores like someone cut his fucking nose off.
Yeah, totally.
And then you get into like, well, this guy's into weird shit.
Yeah, this guy's into like creepy shit.
Yeah, there's some guys that don't shower and they're constantly checking their own smell. Man. You haven't seen those?
Oh yeah, man. But then and it's true, it is a lottery and it's a gamble, but then if the payoff is right, it's magic. I mean,
that's
you
what
think
it is.
About how because I remember one of your podcasts you did an interview with Jerry Cantrell, and I never knew how Jerry met Lane.
Right.
And when he told the story, I thought, wow, that's how they met. He needed it. They were at a party.
Yeah.
They get introduced. This guy needs a place to crash.
Yeah.
This guy says, okay, you can crash at my place.
Unbelievable. Who does that?
And then next thing, and it's like, oh, he's in a band. This guy's in a band. They're kind of sharing lockout space. And hey, I'll be in your band.
The guy manages the place.
Yeah.
He's running the lockout joint.
Yeah. I'll be in your band if you do this and this and that. And next thing you know, you have Alice in Chains.
Unbelievable. You know? Yeah. That's so organic.
I know
what I mean?
And that's the gamble though that you take of like, okay, this is gonna work. You gotta have the faith, you know.
I really always believe that these people find each other by some kind of higher power.
Absolutely,
you know what I mean,
man.
You know,
absolutely. It's like the guru, forget his name. He said, you know, nothing comes to you by accident, because what you beam out of yourself is, you know, attracts to you, and it's true. It's like a beam of light, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah.
You could be thinking negative, scary shit, like every time you leave your house, somebody's gonna mug me. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
I'm not saying you're gonna get mugged, but something along the line where you can justify you got mugged in some way will happen. You know what I mean? Or if you think, fuck this, man, I'm gonna make it.
Yeah.
I am gonna be in the biggest band in the world and nothing's gonna stop me. Enter Elaine Staley into your life, or enter Jerry Cantrell into your life, or enter Mick Jagger meeting Keith Richards and hasn't seen him in a while, and he's carrying Muddy Waters albums.
Yeah.
What are the odds of that? Like,
that's
you like that?
Craziest.
Oh, I like that too. Oh. You know, like, what are the odds of that?
That man? Is like, that is so kooky to me, man. When you hear those stories, you're like, wow.
Oh, yeah, man.
I was, I wanted to play a little bit of this guy. I didn't really, I'm getting turned on to music fucking nonstop all the time. And, somebody sent this over to me. And once in a while, when I get down the tube of these guys, I'm like, it's always like, ah. And it's usually when somebody's really promoting a guy who, you gotta watch this guy. When somebody's going, hey, this guy's gonna resurge the rock and roll revival. You know, when people say that, that's always like, you know, the curse up there with he's the next Bob Dylan.
Right.
So whenever people, and that's how I discovered Rival Sons. Somebody said, hey, you heard this? They're the new rock or whatever. And I don't like when people pitch it to me like that, because it's always like, it usually comes with some wallet chains, those fry boots, you know. And so anyway, somebody pitched this to me and I watched a little bit about it. The Honda car company does this thing on people where they say the next person, you know.
Yeah.
There's a kid who moved out here, I believe, from Detroit. His name is Jared James Nichols.
Okay.
And I wanted to bring him up to you because pretty interesting story. He enters some kind of guitar battle, you know, and these big stars are judging it, and he ends up fucking just blowing their minds. So whenever I hear that right away, I go, oh, you know, it's just going to be a guitar guy that doesn't have tunes or whatever. He moves to L.A. Recently in the last couple of years, and he's been going at it. Very, very heavy Government Mule, kind of Zach Wilde vibe.
Cool.
But I started watching it, and I'll give you a little bit of it. This is it right here. Let's see here. I don't have any sound on this. What's going on there? Oh, here we go.
He looks like Ed Mundell.
So he plays with his fingers.
Walking in circles, crying on me, been doing the same damn thing for weeks. Well, I've been out.
You know, you get it.
I totally get it.
Kind of raging slab.
Yeah.
We've seen it a million times.
The P90, man.
Yeah, it's got P90, that P90 tone. Single on a, on a Les Paul. It's
you can cool. really hear
it. Looks like a custom guitar he had made. But he ended up, he moved out here and he ended up doing a European tour opening for Skynyrd.
Oh, wow.
And then at the end of the night, like coming out and playing with Skynyrd, I think on Freebird and shit. There's all this video footage of him, but pretty cool.
That's very cool. I like to hear that kind of style, man.
Yeah,
keeping that alive.
That fucking style never gets big.
No.
Ever. But I like it a lot. Yeah. But man, I mean.
But it endures.
I worship Raging Slab. And if people don't know that, or the Four Horsemen, these are bands back in the late 80s, you know.
Yeah.
Even Government Mule. Of course, Government Mule's big because of, you know, Allman Brothers and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not like, you don't hear it on the radio, is what I'm saying.
No.
You know, it's.
No, you don't.
But it's. Fucking, it's always three or four dudes that are laying down fucking music.
Oh, yeah, man.
And that all comes down to like Robin Trower and all that. Who's playing the Wheel Turn, by the way?
Oh, no way.
Yeah, I was going to go, but I just got this show that I can't announce yet, but I got a show on the night. I was going to go see Robin Trower.
When is that happening?
On the 21st of May. That's a Sunday night. You should go to that.
I'll be here.
Yeah, you should go to that.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
So originally, my whole idea of this podcast was to talk about Bill Withers, which
that's is right. hilarious. That's right, man.
Yeah.
Still Bill, baby. Still Bill.
Still Bill.
What a great songwriter and a great singer and a purist. Just a pure songwriter, man. My yeah. God.
It's unbelievable, you know.
His story is really fascinating.
It really is.
Yeah, man.
I mean, how crazy is it?
Yeah.
We're talking about a guy. I mean, this makes my fucking head fall off.
Now, yeah.
People don't know how hard it is to write songs, how hard it is to learn instruments. I'm sure you know, but I'm just saying you and I did it, and it's like each step is so fucking hard. First of all, you got to go buy an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to learn that instrument. Then while you're learning it, you got to learn to sing.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to learn to fucking write a tune.
You got to learn other people's tunes.
Yeah.
To get to learning your own.
Figure out how to write tunes.
Yeah.
And this guy is basically, he's in the Navy for like 9 years.
Yeah.
He gets out. He's got a little bit of money. He goes, I want to learn how to play a guitar and write songs. Moves to L.A.
He moved to L.A. in 67, by the way. He moved to L.A. in the summer of love.
Yeah.
Like, that must have been mind-blowing in itself. Like, I'm going to come here and be a songwriter. And he shows up here.
Yeah.
Where it's just exploding in 1967 on the Sunset Strip, man.
Exactly. And not only that, but he comes here and he's not like, I want to be like the Doors or Airplane or any of that. I mean, this is kind of like, James Taylor.
Harry Chapin and those cats.
Yeah, yeah.
But also
Carole
different.
King.
Yeah, but so different because it had a little bit of funk to it. It had
a little bit
of grease on it. It wasn't. So I'll have to say I love you in a song kind of a thing. You know, it had a little bit of it was electrified, you know?
Yeah. The dude, I mean, okay. So he's out here, he's working a job where he's making toilets for airplanes.
Wow.
You know? And, He starts demoing a little bit, and he's bringing his demos around, which this really fucking I related to. You know, I think he's like 33 at the time, and all the labels tell him, you're too old.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them, you're too old.
Wow.
And he's like, he just keeps going. And then he gets a record deal, and Booker T produces
his record. Yeah, Booker T from the MGs produced this record. And Stephen Stills played guitar on it.
Stephen Stills plays guitar on it. But the songs that he wrote, you got to talk about his first live concert. He never been on stage, never played a concert, is in front of 5,000 people because he has a number one song,
number one.
Ain't No Sunshine.
Yeah.
Now, while he's fucking recording this, he's still making toilets for airplanes. And he doesn't even leave the job. He gets laid off. And the day that his job asks him to come back, Johnny Carson asked him to play the Tonight Show, Ain't No Sunshine.
No way.
So he's still working his job, and he plays Carson, doesn't even tell anyone at his job because they won't believe him.
No way.
Unbelievable, right?
Wow.
You know, so...
Yeah, that's crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
And he never, ever trusted the record company. What did he call it? He had a term for these guys. It was amazing. And I read a couple things about it. And, of course, you can watch this movie, Still Bill, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's a really good documentary.
And the reason this all came up was I had thought that he had passed away years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, well, you never hear about him. He's not touring or anything. Here's a guy that had 6 major hits, won 3 Grammys.
Yeah.
And, well, of course he's gone because he's not out playing like these other people.
Yeah.
And then about a year ago or whenever the last Grammys were, not a year ago, that was in like, you know, 3-4 months ago, LA Times did a story on him because his pad is up in the hills there,
okay,
looking down on Staples Center, you know, and he's looking like, you know, because the guys from the Roots are like, come on, dude, you got to come out and play again, you know?
Yeah.
And so they did the story on him, and it was incredible. But it just blows my mind, you know, the tunes this guy wrote.
Yeah.
I mean, never wrote a song.
Nope.
Never nothing in his 30s writes Ain't No Sunshine.
Yep.
He writes fucking Use Me Up.
Yep.
Lean on Me.
Yep.
Just the Two of Us, yep. which I love. Just the two of us.
That's with Grover Washington.
Yeah. Jr. And he does that one on the side because he's battling his label.
Yeah, he can't put put things out on his own name because of that. But
Grandma's Hands.
Yep. Grandma's Hands was a single off of the first album, I do believe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, this guy wins major Grammys.
Oh yeah, man. He did SNL in 76. Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah, it was really great.
And not only that, but I'm watching some live footage of him and he just wheels over and starts playing the piano.
Yeah.
You know? And that, oh man, that band he had.
Oh, the band was great, that drummer.
Oh.
He was so tight, man.
Oh.
That's some great footage to see there, man.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
And that guy playing the clav.
Yeah. Doing Use Me Up. Yeah. So good.
They all got shades on.
Yeah.
And Bill Withers' style, just the acoustic.
Yeah.
He's just strumming it, you know?
Yeah, he was wearing that very 70s, like, orange turtleneck kind of a vibe going on.
Yeah.
Very 70s.
You know, it's crazy. Also, Rumble in the Jungle. He played
out there.
Oh,
yeah, that's right. He was out there for that with James Brown, Etta James.
Yeah, yeah.
Who else was it? Whatever. Who else was there? But
a Gladys Knight and the
Gladys
Pips.
Knight. That's right.
Yeah. And that B.B. King.
Yeah, B.B. King. That was during the time when he couldn't put out records either. He went and did that with the Ali Foreman fight. That was a good movie, too, whatever that was called.
Oh, Rumble in the Jungle.
Was it called that?
Yeah. Well, then also the documentary on it was what was it called? Like Zaire. Hold on, I got it right here. It was called When We Were Kings.
Yeah, that was good.
That was great.
Yeah, man.
Remember, that's the whole documentary on the conference, the press conference, and everything up
to
the fight.
Yeah, they show all the footage of James.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
What a genius documentary that is, man. It's funny because he's battling his. This is the fucking, the baffling thing of show business, music business, any kind of, business where there's these suits that think they fucking know. And he called them the Blackspurts.
Really?
They would come in, we're the Blackspurts. They would be like, okay, you need to wear like a gold suit and we gotta get these background singers and they're doing like moves for you. And he's like, fuck you.
Blackspurts.
That's what he called them.
Experts on blackness.
Yeah. And a matter of fact, while he was battling the Blackspurts at Columbia, this guy... He has five monster hits.
Monsters.
I'm telling you, now, if you have two monster hits, you get to do anything
you're
you want.
Set. Yeah.
This guy had five monster hits, and they were still questioning him. He would turn the records in. They would review them with the Blackspurts, and then be like, Nope, you got to be doing it. And meanwhile, he's shooting these songs to other people, and they're massive hits, like Just the Two of Us and stuff. While he's battling them, and they don't want to put out his records because they don't think they're hits, they're putting out a Mr. T vocal record. Mr. T sang a record.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I gotta hear
the
that.
A-team. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. And that's when he fucking said, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They probably wanted to like pimp him up. You know what I mean? Make him something that he's not, especially in terms of his fashion statements. I mean, I don't think that guy cared. I think he wanted his music to be heard, and that was it. He didn't care about his blackness. I mean, it's absurd.
It's absurd.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm telling you, man. I am telling you, these tunes right here, Lean On Me, one of the greatest songs ever.
Yep.
Ain't No Sunshine.
Yep.
These are unbelievable tunes.
Yep.
Just the Two of Us, Grandma's Hands, and by the way, there's a live record. He does Carnegie Hall.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
And he tells stories like about grandma.
Yeah, he gives you he gives you a little bit before each song.
It's insane that this guy never did it until he's like 33.
Yeah.
And he's like a seasoned live performer.
He is. He's a real pure musician because you can watch his hands on guitar.
Yeah.
You can see the way he tuned it and stuff. It's real like it's like kind of rudimentary.
Oh.
And that's all he needed. You know what I mean? Because the genius of his writing was already inside of him. He just needed enough raw material and enough faculty to get the idea out. And once he got to that point, he took off. He started writing everything he needed to write, and it was very pure. Those lyrics, he didn't, it does, to me, it just doesn't sound like he labored over this stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It sounded like it just flowed out of him. What was that song, Lovely Day? We forgot to mention that one. That was a big hit for
him.
Yeah. You know?
It's funny because he said they would come at him like, you got to write more about some like sex and, you know, like women and stuff. And he's like, yeah, I'm writing about what I know, man. Grandma's hands. You know what I mean?
Could you imagine him trying to sex you up? I mean, come on. Man.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's crazy to think like he's around during the James Taylor, Carole King, all that singer-songwriter 70s stuff, Cat Stevens and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You have this gold mine. Why are you trying to turn it into like something else?
Yeah.
These are some of the biggest songs of our lifetime.
Yeah,
right
they're trying to make an Al Green out of him, putting him in like, you know, satin, you know,
same
satin
thing Al Green left, you know, he left and went into the, like, you know, the church. And everything, you know, and he wouldn't even sing any of those songs for years because he thought it was just too, like, sex, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But, man, Bill Withers, dude, is just people, a lot of people, I'm always talking about Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah.
But it's definitely Bill Withers, man, is so mind-boggling to me how great. And these records sound incredible.
They sound really, really good, man.
Man.
I'd pay good money to go see him perform if he ever wanted to do a round, kind of a farewell thing. Like, all right, you know what? I'll go out and play these songs.
Because
those songs are still in our collective consciousness and, you know what I mean, society, they're still out there. You can turn on the radio and still hear Use Me Up or Rain or Sunshine.
I hear them
all
the time. They're on movies, they're on commercials, they're everywhere. And he's 78 now, man, you know. It's like, go out and, like, how about just, like, a run of acoustic shows, storytelling?
Yeah.
Wow, man.
That'd be great. I would pay good bread to go see that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, so if you guys haven't seen this documentary, it's on iTunes. It's $3, Still Bill. And his story just really fucking blows my mind to just think about. He had those tunes on demos, and they're like, "You're too old." Yeah. How do you hear those tunes? You don't go like, "Well, fuck it, he's too old. Let's grab this guy and put these songs on another somebody else's records or anything." How do they just not grab him in general?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know, that's exemplary of you know, the record label mentality, especially back then. It was monstrous. Nowadays, if he came along with those songs, I guarantee you he'd be treated very differently. Somebody out there would be like, no, I'm not letting that.
Oh, yeah.
Grab it by the tail.
Oh, they grab him and go, Pink needs a new record.
Yeah.
Here's four of her songs. You know, Pink or Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, yeah,
any of those people, you know, like, hey, here's your comeback record.
Yeah, exactly.
Ain't No Sunshine. You know, they're just going, Ain't No Sunshine when you're gone.
Yeah.
You know, like, it'd be like a monster hit.
Yeah.
You know, oh, my God. It just blows my mind. He was born on the 4th of July.
Was he really?
Firecracker. I still can't believe he's in the Navy and they goes, you know, I want to move to LA and write songs.
Some songs.
Like if somebody told you that, like when I said I want to try comedy at 44, people look at you like you said, you know, I'm going to be Superman.
Yeah.
They really look at you.
Yeah, good luck, pal.
Yeah, they're like, comedy at 44 or songwriter at 33.
Yeah, yeah,
you were in the Navy, dude.
Yeah.
You don't even play an instrument. He never sang ever outside the shower.
Amazing.
That shit is crazy.
Amazing.
Imagine he's just making these toilets.
Yeah, and writing these songs in his head.
Yeah.
These songs were he was working on them all day in his head.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Man.
And when he got the proficiency to pick up an instrument and go, oh, okay, so this chord fits what I hear in my head.
It's crazy.
He hit the ground running, man.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah.
Grammys.
Yeah, Grammys, man.
Grammys.
TV appearances.
Oh, Johnny Carson.
Everybody coming out of the woodwork to congratulate you.
Oh, worship.
Stephen Stills playing on his record, who was the biggest guitar player in the biggest band in the world at the time, or one of, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He said a great thing. He goes, when you got hit records and Grammys, all of a sudden you become really handsome. he said he heard handsome more than ever. He's like, wow, I've never been called handsome, and I'm 33. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, people like, what a handsome man. These women would come up to him. I love
That's
that.
That's awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
I remember this old salty dude when I lived in San Fran off of Pine Street. He had a he had a hardware store, and I'd go in there like once a month for something. My apartment would always fall apart, but I didn't want to complain because it was like $250 a month, and I didn't want him to raise the rent or anything.
Yeah.
So I'd go to this guy, and every time I'd come in, he'd go, "Handsome. Handsome, how are you today? Handsome." Every time, "Handsome, I have the doorknob here, handsome. Look at this doorknob, handsome. Handsome, I've got a doorknob for you."
He wanted to turn your doorknob.
I love that, though. I love the guy. He was so cool. Yeah. Handsome. Yeah. I love that he called me that because it was so bizarre. Like, handsome.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I have the new phone recorder for you. Back then, he sold like phone recorders, the answering machine. Handsome new answering machine. Oh my god.
The new Sanyo.
Yeah, he would have those at the hardware store for some reason. I loved it, man. All right, let's get out of here, man.
Yeah, let's do it.
It is the 6th of April. Oh, real quick, this episode is also brought to you by the fantastic El Cajon Harley Davidson. I love these guys. It's summertime coming now. It's starting to get warm. Get yourself some two wheels. Go down to El Cajon Harley in San Diego. Also, follow them on Instagram, man. They got all kinds of great photos all the time going up. You can really get a feel for the shop. They've got a ton of motorcycles there, used and new. They have the brand new Milwaukee 8 engines there. They got a great service department. Follow them on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that. Tell Greg Riley I sent you in. It's April. They've got the bikes, babes, and barbecues going the first Saturday of each month. That started up, and that's a party. You got to go down there. Also, they got financing going on right now, all kinds of specials. Go check them out. Harley Davidson, El Cajon. Right there on the El Cajon Boulevard, I believe it is. And boy, does that fucking area get hot as shit. El Cajon.
Oh, yeah.
I guess the El Cajon means
hot balls? El Cajones? I don't know.
El Cajones. Hey, hot balls, hot Harley. Ball. Hot balls, Harley. Go check out El Cajon Harley, Greg Riley, and all the guys down there. Super cool. They're big comedy and rock and roll fans. And tell them I sent you. And also, thanks, everybody, for all the great response we've been getting. Nope. Before you go, you went to the Mick Rock documentary last night.
I did, man. I went to go see Shot.
I can't even believe I didn't get in.
Yeah, I know, man. I was surprised.
He does my podcast. He does a photo shoot with me.
Yeah.
And then doesn't even hit me up to go to the premiere. I couldn't have gone last night anyway. I had two incredible shows.
Yep.
But
I don't think he had say. Yeah. He didn't have a say in who showed up.
Oh no, he
I could tell. There. We could tell when we got there. It was just like he was invited as well.
Yeah. You know what I mean? How was the movie?
It was really well done, man. It really was. Yeah, it was a great movie and worth checking out.
Yeah, it's called Shot.
It's called Shot. Yeah.
I had him on the podcast like a month ago.
Yeah, and he is a trip.
He is a trip
for sure.
Yeah, handsome. He said he's great when he talks to you. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, you know he's got a great speaking voice. Yeah.
Does he get all into the cocaine thing on the movie?
And he's got that proper British sort of way of speaking, you know. But yeah, he gets into the cocaine. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
His fucking heart exploded.
Oh yeah, dude. He went through quadruple bypass. Yeah. And he just recovered from a kidney transplant or liver transplant or something just recently.
This guy's outlaw.
And he spoke, you know, after the movie. That, you know, there was a little Q&A and he was in the eye of the storm, man.
Yeah, he was.
Iggy,
him and Bowie, man, just rolling around America.
Yeah. Well, you know, the cool thing was he had these cassette tapes that he dug up like midway through production of making this documentary, and he gave them to the director, and he said, the director's name was like Barnaby somebody, and he said, you know, I happen to have these cassettes. I was recording the guys while I was shooting them. So he's got these cassette tapes of him and Bowie, him and Lou Reed, up all night doing blow, just talking about all kinds of shit. They splice it in the movie here and there, but I would love to know.
Yeah, audio.
I would love to hear that entire conversation, because there's a spot where Lou Reed's talking about the Ramones, and Mick says, you know, what do you think of punk rock? And Lou's like, it's shit.
Wow.
And he says, well, what do you think of these bands? And he says, I just think it's shit. And he says, you know, well, what about the Ramones? I mean, this is kind of you. Like, this is.
Yeah.
And he said, no, this is not me. I could never be this. I'm too intellectual. And he said, so you don't like this tune in particular? And he said, no, I think it's rubbish. And I thought, wow, what a candid moment that he has on audio cassette. He's also got David Bowie discussing how, you know, he's not real. Nobody, the Lennons of the world and the Bowies and the Iggys, all these guys are not real. They're just rock and roll demigods. They never existed in the first place. Bowie was a very fascinating cat, man. Very fascinating cat. But yeah.
God.
Yeah.
But Nick Rock, what a great, I mean.
Yeah, great photographer.
Oh, he captured it, man. Dude, this guy, does those Bowie Ziggy photos. Yeah. He gets the iconic Iggy photo where he's turned backwards.
Yes. And this is before... This is before Iggy, before Ziggy is Ziggy. This is before Starman.
Yeah.
He got that iconic photo that became very controversial of Ziggy on his knees while Ronson's playing a solo, like, and it looks like he's blowing him.
Yeah.
And at that time, hugely controversial, but yet at the same time, highly embraced because of the counterculture that was going on in glam rock and you know, the gay scene in New York, and everybody was loving each other. And it was, as he said last, it was very controversial to kiss a boy. Lou Reed and Bowie kissing didn't mean they went to bed. It was a statement. It was a rebellious, revolutionary act to kiss a guy. Yeah. Nowadays, as he said, nowadays it's not so revolutionary at all, but back then it was.
And
he was before, dude. He was before it all happened. He was taking pictures of the Stooges when there was like fucking 20 people in the room.
It's crazy.
You know what I mean?
He was telling me stories that were blowing my mind on the podcast, and also then, you know, look at all his photos. You know, he did the I Love Rock and Roll cover. You know, Joan Jett.
Yeah.
He did Raw Power.
Yeah.
He did all the Bowie stuff.
He did the Ramones,
Transformer, the Ramones, everything. I mean, this guy was at the ground zero of fucking just New York, man.
Absolutely, dude. Blondie.
Oh, Blondie.
He took some wonderful pictures of Debbie Harry. Like he said, you know, she looked more beautiful than Marilyn Monroe in some pictures. Just her natural, you know, she was so natural and relaxed in her photos. Beautiful, Debbie Harry.
Well, that's great. It's out this week, I believe, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And it's not too long. You know, some documentaries you can be like, okay, I got it, man, you know.
Yeah.
Nope, it was exciting, and the editing was great. Filmmaking was well done, and just sort of the cinematography in general, it was creative. It wasn't Talking Heads.
Yeah,
it wasn't. Speaking of Talking Heads, he also did the Talking Heads.
Yep, album exactly.
But it wasn't just a bunch of heads in the movie.
He did Queen too.
He did Queen too.
Unbelievable!
An amazing photo, and he
and
took
then the Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, which was I think he took that photo from Marlene Dietrich or somebody, some really Vogue model. He showed it to Freddie and said, I want to do this.
These photos in this garbage can behind fucking like Paramount Pictures or whatever. And they were photos
it was
like
a
that.
Famous, who we all know, Betty Davis or somebody.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and he said, what about this? And he showed it to Freddie and he said, great.
Yeah, it's so great.
Yeah.
Man.
You know,
wow.
Yeah.
I got to see that, man. I got to see it this week. Yeah. All right. Well,
hey, can I plug my podcast before we say goodbye? It's the Rock and Roll Bible with Michael Devin. And I'm a few episodes in. If you like rock and roll factoids and that kind of a stuff.
It's coming out tomorrow again?
It'll be out tomorrow again. Yeah, every Friday, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I just kind of cover what goes on in the news or in history this week, you know.
There you go, man.
Yeah.
And then you're going to New York. When are you coming back? We'll pick up where
we left off. Yeah, I'll be back. I got to be back here on the 25th, somewhere around there.
25th of April?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So a couple weeks, you know.
Yeah,
enough to get my... get all my little bunnies and my missus home safely.
Are you home on the 25th or the 24th?
I believe I am home on the 24th.
Oh, yeah. Let's squeeze one in on the 25th because then I split to Denver Comedy Works for a week there.
All right.
I want to plug the shows before I do go, actually. This weekend, I'll be in Denver with Mark Maron Friday and Saturday, Boulder and Denver. I think it's the Paramount Theater and the Boulder Theater. And then, let's see what else I got coming up here. Oh yeah. I'm going to be headlining San Jose Improv April. Are we in April? Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
I don't know what 19th. Do not miss this, one night only. Also, Ontario Improv, Ontario, California, April 13th through the 15th. And something else good. Oh, yeah. Denver Comedy Works, like I said, April 26th through the 30th. Minneapolis, I'm coming your way. House of Comedy in June 14th through the 18th. And a Boston date is coming here. I'll announce that on Monday.
My hometown. Boston, yeah. You going?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
kid.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Monday's guest will be Steve-O from Jackass. I love all you guys. Candles lit.